listening to 91.9 KPTZ, Port Townsend. This is Marsha Pearlstein, your friendly neighborhood interviewer. You are about to hear one of three special film festival interviews, true previews of coming attractions. Jeanette Force, our intrepid executive director of the Port Townsend Film Institute, has added the first Port Townsend Women and Film Festival to our annual roster. On March 28th and 29th, we get to combat the winter blues, head for the Rosebud and Rose Theaters to view 9 feature films and 3 shorts, which prominently highlight women directors, producers, writers, and actors. Jane Julian, our talented film procurer, has been trotting around the country discovering these gems. Today I am in conversation with Nancy Cates, producer-director of Regarding Susan Sontag. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you so much for having me.
And my first question is, what got you started on this project? It's been a very long, long haul, so what got you into it?
I always don't like talking about how long it took. You know, you had to rub it in, but it's a big project, so that's why it took so long.
I love talking about how long something is because it shows how relentless and committed you are.
You have to be a little bit nuts to be a documentary filmmaker. That's true. I was saddened by Sontag's death, and I didn't know her. I met her once very briefly for about 20 seconds, but I felt that an important voice had gone out of the world, and I had the idea for the film at my office. And I went home, and I had 7 of the books that she had published while she was alive. There were 16 books, so I figured that's pretty good. I had almost half of her books. And, you know, she was never assigned to me for class. I was interested in her from pretty early age, you know, 1920. So it was just a natural subject for me to pursue. But making a film about Sontag is like climbing Mount Everest. It's not a small task, and it's not for the faint of heart.
I met her a few times in the 70s, and I, too, was saddened. And she's somebody that so many people have really looked up to because she cut such a wide swath. Her areas were numerous, and she was, you know, a true intellectual without being strident, although she could be tough. What got you interested in her initially? Was it the breadth and depth of her offerings and her interests?
I think as a young woman, I was probably looking for a role model, although I didn't realize that at the time. You know, my mother actually had a job, went back to work when I was 6, and in my little suburban neighborhood, you know, people didn't do that so much. So at the same time, my mother was still very traditional in a lot of ways, and I think somebody like Susan Sontag was a completely different model of how to be a grown-up woman and a Jew, actually. And one of my friends who's an academic said, oh yeah, all of us looked up to her, but we had to move past her to become who we were. And I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to say about Sontag. But she was a role model because she refused to be put in a box. She refused to be a second-class citizen because she was a woman. She did whatever she wanted to do. And that was really exciting, particularly when she was kind of at the height of her powers, which was, you know, the 70s and 80s. By the mid to late 80s, she'd kind of become a little bit less on the forefront of what was cutting edge. But, you know, she still continued to do her work and remain relevant, but it, you know, the 60s and 70s and the early 80s were really her time where she was kind of in the public a lot and in her prime.
Well, and really respected. She was just respected across the board, and that made her a true role model. It's interesting you mentioned Jewish because that interested me as well, but also I've noticed you've hit a number of film festivals. She fits into so many categories, the regular film festivals, of course, Jewish film festivals, and the queer film festivals, the GLBT, because she was bisexual. I think that's interesting that she doesn't have a single niche in her life, nor does her film have a single niche.
Well, my distributor actually said, cynically, if you want to make more money in film festivals, make a film about a gay Jew, which, of course, was not the point here. But we were fortunate that people seemed to want to show the movie. It's been in documentary festivals, mainstream festivals, LGBT festivals. There haven't been that many women's film festivals, but a few, and Jewish film festivals. I go to the Jewish Film Festival in San Francisco every year, and it's the grandmother of all of them. So, of course, it was a great honor to be in that film festival finally after years and years of attending and doing pre-screening for them and all sorts of things.
I was in the Bay Area from 1965 after college till 2005, And I was also an attendee for the Jewish Film Festival, which is an amazing festival. And so to have kicked off the film there is a wonderful thing. And also you kicked off Tribeca, right?
Yeah, well, the thing is, the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival was after a number of other screenings. But yeah, the film premiered at Tribeca in April. And that was actually great because she was a New Yorker. And what better place to premiere a film about a New Yorker than New York City? So it's an interesting festival because it's very industry heavy, and some film festivals have more of a sense of community. I don't think that's the strength of the Tribeca Film Festival, but it was a great place to premiere.
So what kind of feedback have you been getting about the film in terms of what people seem to respond most to?
For people who haven't seen it, it's a pretty visually exciting documentary, and I think it's known for being kind of evocative visually. And so there are talking head interviews in it, but there are a lot of sequences that are just really there for the pleasure of your eyes and your ears, because it has a really great score. So people are really startled by it because it's not what they're expecting, and that's great for me. And it also is just not like other documentaries. It's not an experimental film by any means, but there are experimental techniques in it. And it really is a film that is a celebration of the visual. And I think that that's what Sontag would have wanted and kind of what she deserved. She was obsessed with beauty and with photography and with imagery. So we went with that. You know, we thought this is our opportunity to make something really interesting.
You know, I'm going to quote you to yourself. One of the quotes I read online that you said was that they're visual metaphors for Sontag's ideas. And that seems to me to sort of capture the spirit of the film.
When we were making the film, I had the opportunity to show the film in its early inception to a group of learning and retirement people. And this older man came up to me, and he was really annoyed. He said, "Why don't you have any images of a person sitting at a typewriter typing? It's a film about a writer." And I said, "Well, sir, that's why. You know, you've already seen that." And he was really kind of irate about this. And I said, "I don't really want to do that." But it is difficult to make a film about a writer because writing is not an action sport. So we really thought about that, and we thought about, well, what does it mean to think? What does it mean to be a writer? And so we tried to create imagery that would in some way be metaphoric for those processes which are so internal. You know, it's not like watching someone play basketball.
Well, you know, you write in her spirit. I think she would have loved that aspect of it, that it wasn't the usual thing. It wasn't a cut-and-dry documentary. It was something that kind of lived and spoke in an interesting way, because cutting edge is one thing that you can really say about her, of many things that you can say about her. So her various areas of, you know, her political progressivism, her intellectualism, her interest in photography, her adventurousness, all the travel that she did, are those things represented in the film, or?
Well, it's hard to cover every single thing in a life that spans so much time and so much distance, but we certainly tried. And, you know, we see her going to bear witness to war in Vietnam, in Israel, in Sarajevo, which she did, you know, at great risk to herself. I mean, she was in Hanoi when we were bombing Hanoi at the height of the Vietnam War. This was not, first of all, a legal thing for an American to do, so she began to be followed by the FBI for a while, although they couldn't find anything out about her except that she'd gone to North Vietnam. But, you know, she could have been killed by a sniper in Sarajevo. I mean, she was putting herself at great risk. I'm forgetting all the other parts of your question, but we certainly see her in different countries. She lived for periods of time in France. So it's, you know, we tried to address both her work and her life, and it's a very complicated story that covers a lot of ground.
Before the end of her life, she focused quite a bit on illness and had interesting things to say. Is that represented in the film?
Yes, we deal extensively with, she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer in 1976 or so, 75, 76, and then wound up writing the book Illness as Metaphor when she was done with her treatment, and she wrote it kind of in this furious, fast-paced manner. She also later, 10 years later, wrote AIDS and its Metaphors, and both of those subjects are covered pretty well, I would say, in the film. And it also, again, allowed us to use really interesting imagery because we got all these cancer cells, and we even got, this doesn't really matter to the viewer, but we got some footage from the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle, which is where she was treated. So that's kind of an interesting little inside baseball thing, that some of the stuff on the screen came from the same research facility where she was being treated for cancer at the very end of her life when she had leukemia. But Sontag had three bouts of cancer, the last one which was fatal. And it was a huge part of her life. And one thing that we were not able to address in the film, but which really moved me, is that she would help people who had cancer. Just, you know, people would call her up or, you know, write her a letter, because in those days it was long before email. And in her papers at UCLA, there are all these thank you notes from people that she had helped in some way or supported, you know, total strangers who had reached out to her because of their own illnesses. So I think that Sontag's engagement with cancer is something that is just very emotionally touching. And she was courageous, and, you know, she was also afraid, like anyone.
And able to be open about the various things that she was feeling about that. And actually, in terms of a Port Townsend audience, many people in this town are connected with Fred Hutchinson. It will have some local resonance, in a sense. You're listening to 91.9 FM KPTZ, Port Townsend, and I'm interviewing for the first women's film festival in our town. I'm interviewing the person who produced and directed Regarding Susan Sontag. Her name is Nancy Cates. She hails from the Bay Area, and, well, she hails from Boston originally, but how long have you been in the Bay Area, Nancy?
Since the fall of 1991, when I arrived to go to graduate school in documentary film at Stanford.
Uh-huh. What other areas of her life compelled you and really did you especially connect with?
Well, I was one of those high school students who was always walking around with a camera, a still camera, and I spent a lot of time in the dark room. And so her interest in photography was something that I shared. I mean, I'm probably not as passionate about it now as she was, but I certainly went through that photography period, like many, many young women do. And I think that she actually kind of foresaw the world we live in now with Instagram and Facebook and people just constantly taking pictures of themselves and everything else they do, or, you know, the food they eat at the restaurant, et cetera, et cetera. She said in 1975, she wrote, "We need an ecology of images." And, you know, the world of images has just exploded many, many, many millions of times further since then. So that was something that was very interesting to me, that she was both the subject of photographs, because she was photographed by many of the most amazing photographers of her day, including Cartier-Bresson and, you know, people like that, Robert Mapplethorpe, whom she was friends with. And she wrote about photography, and she took it seriously at a time when it was just beginning to be taken seriously in the art world and in the museum world. She said it is the important art form of our time, and I think she was right. So that's just one aspect of her. The film also delves pretty extensively into her relationships, particularly with women, and her marriage to Philip Reeve, whom she divorced after 9 years, I believe. She married very young, 17. She was, you know, out of that marriage by her late 20s. And then most of the significant relationships in her life after that were with women, although not all of them.
And so, she had one son. What's he up to?
David Reif, he's a writer. I believe he's living in Paris at the moment. He's on the Council of Foreign Relations. And he was not interested in speaking with us, although he does appear in the film in archival footage.
Uh-huh. Do you have any idea why he was not interested?
You'll have to ask him.
Okay, that's fair enough. I also got the feeling, I, like you, just really looked up to her and just really thought that she was pretty spectacular. She was really interested in both the particular and the universal. She had a mind that just went everywhere. I can't imagine how you would capture her mind in images, but was there a possibility that some of that came through?
I certainly think you get the sense of her avidity, as her son puts it in the movie, that she was interested in everything. And You can see her kind of racing along, galloping along, and you know, trying things. She, in addition to all the stuff she wrote, she directed 4 films. She directed a few plays. She didn't know how to make a film or how to direct a play, and the results were mixed. But she was willing to do that. And so she had this not only mind that was interested in everything, but she was very adventurous and kind of courageous. And I certainly think the film captures that sense of liveliness, a sense of, you know, insisting on living even when she was given these terminal diagnoses. She said she was going to fight to the last breath because that's, she wanted more life. You'd go to the opera with her, and then she'd want to go to a midnight movie and then go to Chinese food at 3 a.m. And she was kind of a consummate New Yorker in that way. I think the film captures as much of that as you can squeeze into 100 minutes. I think in any art form, if you're honest, there's the thing you're trying to do in your mind, and then there's what you achieve. And they're never the same. There are these things in math where you're approaching an infinite, and you never get there. You know, you're on the X and Y axis, and you're never going to get to where you're going. Did I achieve what I wanted? Well, I achieved far as we could take it. Is there another film about Susan Sontag in my mind that will never be able to get made because the footage doesn't exist of her when she was 3 or something? Sure, you know. But that's what art is.
And I think that part of the lens, no pun intended, that we look at films with is that sense of the connection between intention and what actually ended up happening. So it always interests me to hear what an artist's intention is, and you're very articulate about yours. So I'm enjoying this conversation. I'm not sure about you, but I am.
Oh, I'm enjoying it too. It makes me squirm a little bit. I'm not one for tooting my own horn. Few of the questions seem a little bit in that direction.
Well, I'm a Universal fan, and I like to toot people's horns or give them the opportunity. But the other thing that I think it sounds like from your description of what you were trying to do is that she refused to be pigeonholed. She refused to be considered just one thing because her interests were so varied and were so wide. And so I think that touching on a number of them, and especially for the younger generation who has no idea who she is, I'm always amazed by that. I think that that's really important, that you were able to give a sense of the breadth of her interests and her knowledge. And she didn't suffer fools lightly. That one I know.
No, she certainly did not. In fact, when I did meet her for really like 20 seconds, 30 seconds, I was just finishing up my education as an undergraduate, and I happened to have written a paper where I had, in desperation, used against interpretation to try to help myself out of a bind. And so I was really grateful to her. And she just gave me this look, you know, which said, you know, I was like, oh, Ms. Sontag, nice to meet you, and thank you, you kind of saved my butt. And she just looked at me like, my work does not exist to help hapless undergraduates with their problems. and that was it. That was my time with Susan Sontag. But, you know, the one thing we haven't mentioned, which, or not in much detail, which we should, is that the film itself is a feminist project. It, you know, was directed by a woman, the cinematographer with a woman. That was quite important to me. I mean, it was definitely a co-ed team. But Sontag was a bit of a mixed feminist. She wrote wonderful feminist statements in several essays. But as some of the people in the film say, she wasn't great about actually helping other women get anywhere. She wasn't always helpful to her male friends either, I should say. Sigrid Nunez, who is a writer who actually was involved with David Reif, Susan's son, for a little while when they were much younger than they are now, she says she was a feminist who found most women wanting. You know, why do they wear makeup? You know, why do they spend so much time on things like, you know, fashion and handbags and all this stuff? And Sontag thought this was ridiculous. But that's another interesting thing. She was a person of great contradiction. I'm talking about Sontag, not Sigrid, because she also wanted people to think she was beautiful, and she used her beauty to great advantage in her career. I mean, we might not be talking about her if she had not been so beautiful, because she was very brilliant and a great, you know, a great thinker. But there are lots of other people out there who were great thinkers. But Sontag managed to achieve a certain position in the culture partly because of her looks and sort of this, I don't know, daringness that she had, and this refusal to be a second-class citizen, as I mentioned. So there is a bit of a feminist agenda, which I think is worth saying, given it's the Women's Film Festival in Port Townsend.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And she was truly a critical person in an incisive way, and not always a kind way, but she made people think, and I think that that is very important. We're almost out of time. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you think would be useful for people to hear before seeing the film?
I'm trying to think about that. I think it's just, I hope that they will come with an open mind and also with open ears, because the music in the film is really extraordinary. I had two women composers who are actually a married couple, Laura Cartman and Nora Kroll Rosenbaum, and the music combines jazz and kind of avant-garde classical music in this really interesting way. Sometimes there's both a string quartet and jazz going on at the same time, or in different places the jazz takes over because it's more romantic. But the score has actually just been released. I think you can get it on iTunes now. And it was just a wonderful collaboration. And so whenever I'm there with an audience, I say beforehand, you know, this is a film with some abstract imagery in it. Don't worry about it if you don't understand something. There's no quiz at the end. And please also try to listen to the music. Often the audience, people thank me afterwards, because most movie music exists so that you don't really notice it that much, right? It just kind of supports the emotions of the film. But if you really listen to it, it's delightful.
Well, it seems to have the same kind of range that she does in terms of the visual images, the music, the concepts, and people. I get the impression people are going to go out of there at least having conversations, which she always promoted conversations. By the way, the time I met her in smaller circumstances was, you know, an Upper East Side cocktail party. I didn't have your courage to ask her anything or to say anything. I just hovered, and because she was intimidating. And yes, she was a feminist, and she liked feminists. She liked, you know, progressives of similar mind, but she was scary, and of course I was much younger, so I applaud your courage. And
well, you know, one thing, not everyone will like her watching the film, and that's okay with me, but I had hoped from the beginning that if you went with your friend to see the movie and you walked out of there and you were having an argument or a disagreement about Susan Sontag, then we probably did our job.
And I can guarantee you will, that people will have arguments about Susan Sontag, because that's kind of what she elicited. You know, what you were also saying earlier about her not being particularly helpful to people, I think that was probably more when she was at the height of her career. And as you illustrated later on, when she got ill, she became a lot gentler. And I think that that's true of a lot of people at that stage of life.
Well, I think the irony with Sontag is it was easier for her to be kind to strangers and to go help people in Sarajevo who were being bombed than it was for her to help her friends. And it's just one of the many contradictions about her, that most people help the people that are closest to them. But Sontag had this heroic notion of herself, so she helped people who were further away often.
Well, I love ending on a note of her contradictions, because I will look forward to looking for them. And you are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. And for the Women's Film Festival, the producer and director of Regarding Susan Sontag, Nancy Cates, I thank you for this interview and look forward to meeting you when you come to our town. And my special thanks to Nora Petrich, our station manager and engineer, Larry Stein, our program director, and Mike Schlexer, our production director. Go gently. If you can't go gently, go as gently as you can. This is Marcia Pearlstein, your friendly neighborhood interviewer.
Thanks so much.